Washington, D.C. Acknowledge me.
Chris Russell on the Team 980.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. On is a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital and beyond. Always live and free on the Odyssey app. Good to have you with us. What is up? Heading into the weekend. It's warm out there again somehow. Bright sunshine, at least here in D.C. and on the drive-in. And it actually feels nice, pleasant, what have you out there. Hopefully it'll feel nice and pleasant on Sunday evening, right around, let's call it 7:15, somewhere in that range. Maybe a little bit earlier, maybe hopefully, hell, by 6:30, if the party somehow has started and nobody's got to stress and sweat, that would be good as well. Coming up on the show, we'll get an inside look at the Carolina Panthers. My buddy, my longtime friend and former co-host way back when I was starting in this business, like as a real radio host, kind of, on what became CBS Sportsline, CBSSports.com. It was then Sportsline USA Radio. It was the first ever all-internet-only sports radio network. The problem is they forgot to tell us that only 200 people could listen at one time. Because it was back when you could dial up and modem and when that was the way you connected to the internet, right? There was no wireless internet, right? So they brought all of us down to Fort Lauderdale, Florida to do radio basically around the clock. Me, a bunch of others, Sid Rosenberg, who you may know from formerly from WFAN and IMUS, Scott Kaplan, who's done a bunch of national stuff, and Chris McLean, and Mac and I would do a show, I think from 10 at night until 1 in the morning or whatever, and 200 people max could listen, and one of them almost always was the Birdman, and that's how I got to know the Birdman, who normally calls in and who I went to dinner with on Sunday night just south of Baltimore.
They talk about the fact that early adopters, there is a line where it's like too early.
Mm-hmm.
I think having an all-internet radio station that can only allow 200 people to listen,
it was pretty interesting.
That's a little early.
It was pretty cool. Interesting, to say the least. I mean, it was pretty interesting. I mean, of course, we didn't know that until we were already down there. And then what do you do, right? You're trying to do the best possible thing that you can. So anyway, we'll talk to Chris McLean. He's been a longtime morning show host on WFNZ in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he knows the Carolina Panthers inside and out. So we'll get a little thoughtsy or two on him. And clearly, I was thinking about this on the way in, listening to Daryl Green, who was on with B. Mitch and Finley. And he was talking about how, Mitchell Rails and how Josh Harris, obviously the two primary front faces, if you will, of the ownership group, what kind of men they are, what kind of people they are, what kind of visionaries they are. And, I was on with Mac and his partner T-Bone this morning down in Charlotte. And they were asking me, of course, and lamenting the fact that they're stuck dealing with the owner that they're dealing with and the just terrible disaster at quarterback and what's it like to have a franchise quarterback and essentially a good owner. I said, don't forget, also got a stud young GM and a coach that everybody loves that turns his back, hat back, and everybody thinks is cool and real and genuine and awesome. Got those guys too, and a pretty good ride. Oh, and we got two of those guys from your really good defense from last year.
So you just tried to make the Panthers fan base really dislike
basically, but they were doing a pretty good job of it anyway. So we'll talk to Chris McLean about all that coming up from Charlotte, coming up in just about 15 minutes or so, maybe a little bit less. We were supposed to have Sal Palantonio of ESPN on, but he got called away on assignment for SportsCenter If you're watching SportsCenter throughout the day, you probably see him, I think, from the Eagles facility. He was at NFL Films yesterday, or we would have had him on yesterday. He was scheduled for today at 2 o'clock, and then something came up. A pretty big game in the NFC East. That doesn't involve, of course, the Washington Commanders, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles and the New York Giants as Saquon Barkley makes his return to MetLife Stadium. So Sal is not going to be able to join us today. He will join us probably leading up to the Commanders Eagles game is what he said in a couple of weeks when we go up to Philadelphia for Thursday night football. Speaking of Thursday night football, last night I you know, just watching a bunch of sports, right? And because there was a lot on. And, you know, I was just talking about it with B. Mitch and JP. And, you know, like Virginia Tech is, look, they're sort of a local team, but they're not really a DMV team. But there's a ton of alumni in the area. And I root for them. I want them to do well, right? I just went there a couple of weeks ago, had a great time, first experience there. Enter Sandman, everybody knows that experience. I thought ESPN did a great job last night showing the whole buildup as the players and as the whole team kind of comes through, you know, one of the garden areas, if you will, of Virginia Tech's campus. I'm not sure exactly what they call that, but it's not through a tunnel at first. It's not just from the locker room. It's just a really cool walkout. And then they get into the tunnel, and the crowd's going nuts, and, you know, all of a sudden, Enter Sandman kicks in, and it's just on. I mean, it's just such a cool intro. It doesn't seem as pandemonium-filled this year, and I mentioned that when I went a couple of weeks ago against Rutgers, and I thought, well, maybe it's because it's Rutgers, right? You know, but Boston College is not Clemson. It's not Florida State. It's not Miami. But, yeah, Boston College has been around. A little bit of a rivalry between the two schools Thursday night. I mean, it appeared on television more jacked up last night than it did when I was there a couple of weeks ago for a 3:30 Saturday afternoon game. But it was still cool, man. It is still one of the best, I think, intro. And when ESPN is going to dedicate 4 or 5 minutes to that as part of their broadcast, you know, like there's that. And there's a couple of other cool traditions in college football, obviously, right? Clemson comes down the hill with the rock and all that stuff. You know, Notre Dame play like a champion, all that. Great stuff, right? I'm not trying to dismiss anything. But to me, the best two things going in college football from a fan and from an entertainment and from a tradition and from a wow standpoint is Wisconsin going from third quarter to fourth quarter when they do jump around and 90-plus thousand people at Camp Randall Stadium are jumping like a bunch of lunatics. And all in unison, and it's awesome. And then Virginia Tech's Enter Sandman. And all I can tell you is, you know, again, just being a part of that a couple of weeks ago for the first time, I was just talking with JP. He's like, I've never been to a game there. You know, lived here his whole life. Now it's 4 hours, 4.5, 5 hours away, depending on where you're living in this area. And traffic sucks all the way down there because it's, you know, very congested two-lane highway roads and all that stuff. But it's still crazy to think that we have this kind of gem of sports, this gem of college football, you know, basically a stone's throw away. And a lot of people that I know just have never been there, have never gone. Matt, you've never been to a Virginia Tech home game, have you?
I have not.
Yeah. It's something that, I mean, we got to go. It's just awesome.
I will say a big reason of that is I grew up in a UVA household. So the idea of going down to Blacksburg to a Tech game.
Right.
Was
understood.
Sacrilegious.
Understood. Now, you could go to Blacksburg and see a Virginia Tech game every other year.
Yes. However, I also come from a Tech family or a UVA family, so they never want to go to games
right.
because there's a good chance they're going to lose.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is like if you're not one of these psycho fans where you have to see every game, if you're cool with, hey, every other year I'm going to go see a Virginia Tech game, but it's going to be in Charlottesville. But I'm just telling you, the atmosphere is just, you know,
I'm down to go.
Like, I'm trying not to overhype it and oversell it and have anybody be disappointed by it. But if you just, I don't know. I mean, like, it makes your, like, it makes the hair on your arms stand up and gives you goosebumps, man. And, you know, you get a little emotional thinking of how cool that must be. How awesome of a feeling that must be. And this, you know, the Stadium Lane Stadium's less than 70,000. I think it's 66,000. It's not like one of these behemoth stadiums, you know, 95, 100,000 that you see elsewhere. I mean, Penn State, you know, right now, I think is up to 109,000. I mean, it's just insane. Just insane. I haven't been to Penn State in 30 years. 1992, so 32 years. I saw number one Miami versus number four Penn State at that point, Columbus Day weekend. And it was 91,000, and it was just, I had never seen a stadium that big. It was before FedEx Field was built the way it was built. And it was just crazy. But they didn't have any, like, I mean, unbelievable traditions, if you will. You know, besides, we are Penn State. We are, you know. Okay, that's fine. But Enter Sandman and the way they do it in Blacksburg has just become this cultural phenomenon. And again, the only thing that I can think of in college football that rivals it, and maybe I'm missing something, I'm sure I am, is what they do in Madison between the third and fourth quarter with jump around. Now, again, you might say, well, that's nothing special. That's, you know, everybody does jump around. You don't do it like they do it in Madison. Watch it sometime. And better yet, if you can, go. I've never been up there. Should have gone, but I've never been up there. But that looks amazing on television. Anyway, Virginia Tech beats Boston College 42-21 last night. And, yeah, I watched a ton of that game. And I'll tell you this. Bashaul Tutin, with three rushing touchdowns. I thought he had a passing touchdown. Let me see here. Yeah, he did. Four touchdowns total. 266 rushing yards. That's a hell of a night. I hope he's in an ice bath. I hope he's getting the weekend off, right? And he had 20 receiving yards, one catch, and the one touchdown for four total touchdowns. Virginia Tech over Boston College, 42-21. And they've bounced back somewhat nicely here from that just gut-wrenching loss in Miami, a game that they should have won, a game that they lost before that final play. Neither here nor there. Just talking about it with JP and B-Mitch on the other side before the show. But Virginia Tech should be probably 5-2. And you could make an argument they might even be, you know, if one bounce goes their way in Vanderbilt in the season opener, they could have had another win. They lost in overtime on the road against a team that just upset Alabama. Obviously, the Miami game, the Rutgers game, they played like dog poop for about 2.5 quarters and then came alive, tied it up late, lost it late. They could have won that game as well. I mean, Virginia Tech, for a team that's 4-3, should probably be 6-1. Maybe you could make an argument if a ball bounces the right way here or there, and obviously it didn't, it could be 7-0. And everybody that was talking, Pat McAfee and a couple of others, Matt Barry, I think it was, who actually did the game, I think, last night, on ESPN right before the season started about Virginia Tech being a potential surprise, sneaky playoff contender, they would have been right. Now, listen, it's not going to happen, I don't think. I mean, I guess it could, depending on how the rest of the season plays out. But to be 4-3 at this point, 2-1 in ACC play, not too bad. And obviously a very, very, very good offensive performance last night by Tutin, who's awesome if you haven't watched him. Certainly going to be a high riser when it comes to the NFL draft. Kyron Jones, you know, a little bit sloppy with the football for my liking, but he's, you know, tremendous athlete, makes some big plays as well. And Antoine Powell Ryland, or APR, as they like to call him, just because why wouldn't you shorten up a name if you could? Four sacks on the night. Four. That's right. Four sacks on the night. So kudos to Virginia Tech. They beat Boston College last night in the baseball playoffs real quickly. Man, it doesn't get any better than what the Cleveland Guardians do. Is anybody wondering why they're the Guardians and not the Indians, and why they're not bringing back the logo, and why their fans don't give a rat's ass about anything besides a winning baseball team? Nope, not at all. Thank you very much. They just care about baseball, winning baseball, and winning playoff games. They were down in the ninth. They were up 3-0. Then they were down 4-3. Then they tied up in the ninth inning. Right? I think the score was actually 5-3, if memory serves. And then they win it on a 2-run home run in the bottom of the 10th inning. Just unbelievable drama. We got no drama from the Dodgers and the Mets the last two nights. The Mets on the verge of extinction. Many of you, I'm sure, are probably happy about that. But the Dodgers, one win away, and they play at 5:08 today. So maybe by about 8 o'clock or so, the Mets might be eliminated. We will see. But that was kind of the Thursday night slate from a non-NFL perspective. From an NFL perspective, whoo, it doesn't get any better than this. The New Orleans Saints and the Denver Broncos, baby. We'll touch on that coming up because that was Sean Payton's return, but it was a once. But the injury situation for the New Orleans Saints continues to get worse. We'll touch on that. Tony Bennett has stepped aside at Virginia. We'll get into that. Michael Locksley, the head coach of Maryland, has been sending a very, very, very important message this week. And I know some people have been chirping about it, chiming in on it. I want to talk about it because I think it is very worthwhile. I don't care if it's not just about the Commanders. And we'll talk plenty of Commanders-Panthers. And we'll start doing so with my buddy Chris McClain of WFN. Z in Charlotte next on the Team 980 in the Odyssey app. It is a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital, baby. The 4-2 Washington Commanders hosting the, as Tyler would call them, the South Carolina Panthers. I said, Ty, I said, who are the Commanders playing this weekend? He says, oh, South Carolina Panthers. He just, for whatever reason, cannot say Carolina. He calls them Caroline, and he thinks they're in South Carolina. Now, they're almost in South Carolina. Charlotte is not too far away, as my next guest, my longtime friend, just a good radio, good dude, host and family man, and just an awesome guy. Again, we were telling the story of the old ill-fated Sportsline USA radio network, baby, where a max of 200 people used to listen to me and Chris McClain go at it in our young 20s, and Mac is with us from WFNZ in Charlotte right here, right now on the Team 980. Mac, you remember those days, right? Dial-up internet, modem, 200 people. Oops, we forgot to tell you that.
Hey, man, you got to start somewhere, Russ. Somebody has to first give us a microphone and let us act like fools.
That is true.
And they were some of the early ones to do it.
That is true. They did it, and then they fired our asses, right?
This is true.
Anyway, appreciate you coming aboard. I know I was on with you, obviously, earlier this morning, so I always enjoy mixing it up with you and Bone. So we'll obviously kind of spin it in a different way. But Matt and I were kind of talking before you came on a little bit about kind of the mess that is transferred from Washington down to Charlotte. And I know you are, I don't know what the right word is, frustrated, apoplectic, I'm not sure. How would you describe your emotion and the emotions of the fan base down there, which, let's be honest, Jerry Richardson wasn't a saint by any means, but maybe Tepper made him look, I don't know, kind of normal?
There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, over it is where I'll start. My God, between them and the Hornets, and I know I don't need to talk to you about bad NBA basketball either in that part of the country, but it's like just between those two pro sports teams, my God, we're over it. And as far as Tepper and Richardson goes, I mean, there is no doubt who the better owner was in terms of like how the franchise performed. I mean, two Super Bowls on Richardson's watch, a bunch of playoff appearances, although they never got the elusive back-to-back winning seasons, which is still one of the weirdest stats. Right now, though, I'd take one winning season. Since David Tepper has taken over, it has been six straight losing seasons, and I have a pretty good feeling this is going to be number seven. Mm. And honestly, he has been, and it's another thing y'all can relate to me on, is he has been the biggest obstacle. He's the biggest reason why this team has had the consecutive losing season after losing season since he went over. Whether it's bad hires, whether it's him meddling and, you know, doing harm to the franchise that way, he has really had a hard time going from, you know, filthy rich hedge fund manager, which he was ridiculous at, to trying to figure out this football thing. And you see it, Russ, so many guys make, you know, owners make billions elsewhere in life, and they think that skill set transfers over to football. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's a completely different ballgame.
Well, and it also depends on your patience level, right? I've heard he's tremendously impatient, and that leads to some of this irrational, you know, behavior. But I will say, you know, and I mentioned this with you this morning, right? You have this juxtaposition in football, and you kind of mentioned it as well, where you have to try and do your best to win football games, not only for yourself and your own job. Dan Morgan, the general manager, was just recently promoted. Dave Canales, the new head coach. But players, right? Like, everybody wants to win, and there's a self-preservation society in the NFL. You know, and I wonder, I guess... when you look at the whole situation, is Tepper taking a major step back, allowing them to play Andy Dalton instead of what we all perceive to be his choice, the failed Bryce Young? Like, how do you kind of process that out?
I get, this is one where, I mean, obviously the first reaction to this move, because it's crazy, because the whole narrative was that Dave Canales was brought here to kind of be the quote-unquote QB whisperer for Bryce Young, right? Like, you saw what Canales did with Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield, and so the feeling was that that's why he was wanted, right? It's his resume, kind of working with quarterbacks and getting them to improve. So we all thought, everybody thought, locally and nationally, well, that's what he's here to do. So after two games, and those were two hideous games, like, Bryce was immensely worse than last year, which is hard to fathom.
Yeah.
Because last year, as you well know, Russell, was one of the most brutal seasons a quarterback has had that was drafted, obviously, number one overall. Yeah. He came back, and he looked even more like afraid in the pocket. Mm-hmm. And watching the rush and not watching, right? Like, you know, the first year we could chalk it up to, okay, the offensive line was terrible, the weapons were not getting separation, the coaching was dysfunctional. But this year, the offensive line, they spent $150 million on two guards, and the offensive line has shockingly been one of the best pass-protecting units in the league. Mm-hmm. And it was like that in the first two games. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't know it watching Bryce Young run out of clean pockets and stuff like that. It's just, I couldn't believe how the offseason did not, like, you know, erase that kind of shell shock nature. So, like,
because Canales was viewed as like a quarterback whisperer, right? He single-handedly turned around Baker Mayfield, single-handedly saved Geno Smith, and then to come out and look as poorly as he did. I mean, everyone was expecting there to be a process, a buildup, but not a regression, right?
So I think the feeling is, like, and again, right away, a lot of people started thinking, oh, David Tepper did that, right? But like you're saying, he loved Dave, you know, he liked Bryce a ton in the process coming out. So like it would be, I don't know, it's hard to believe that he would be the one. Plus the feeling was he hired Canales to kind of be that whisperer to Bryce. I think the feeling is, you know, Adam Thielen, who does not do this very often, kind of threw a little mini fit in that second game because he was wide open on a third down play and Bryce is, you know, too bothered by the rush to even see it, right? He's not, and that's supposed to be Bryce's like strong suit, is reading defenses, progression,
processing.
The processing. And it's like he can't process because he's so bothered by rush that might be coming to him. So Thielen kind of threw a fit. And I think the feeling is that maybe Canales kind of felt like guys are looking at each other, realizing, like, man, this is really bad.
Right.
Like, we can't do anything with this quarterback. So I think maybe part of it was to make sure the veterans in the locker room, you know, stay engaged. And Andy Dalton certainly has done that. You know, they feel like they have a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, the offense, y'all will see this Sunday, is by far the best unit now on the team.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, you know? I mean, they immediately win that first game out in Vegas, and whatever you think of the Vegas Raiders, I mean, you know, is whatever you think. But they haven't won since, but every week that I see them, for the most part, they're at least competitive offensively. And that's where I worry about from a Washington Commanders perspective. I mean, we'll get to the defense in a sec, but from an offense for the Carolina Panthers perspective, the Commanders don't get a lot of takeaways, which is a hallmark of Dan Quinn's defense, so they haven't gotten it yet. They're starting to get a little bit, but not a whole lot. If Andy keeps free, which he wasn't able to in the second half last week when he had the two picks, if Andy keeps it free, I wouldn't be shocked if Carolina Mac scores 24, 27 points in this game, because you can run and throw against this Commanders defense.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think they can do both. And Chuba Hubbard, I mean, leads the league in success rate running the football, you know, third in rush yards. I mean, I have to be honest with you, and he'd be right up there. I swear he'd be right up close to Derrick Henry if they just weren't 25th in the league in rushing. The problem is, you know, Russell, because of the defense that we'll get into and the train wreck that is, which Commander fans will love and Jaden Daniels will love on Sunday, like, because of that, they get behind too far and Canales starts to get away from that running game. You know what I mean? And some of it's probably called for. Maybe he does it a little too early. But, like, that's the problem. If this team could ever just stay even throughout a game and not feel like we got to play catch-up, they could run Chuba even more. And Chuba Hubbard's been amazing. The offensive line's been amazing, pass blocking and run blocking. But I definitely agree with you. I like the Panthers' offensive matchup. The problem is it reminds me of the Falcons game last week, where it's like I could see them being in this game for three quarters. The Falcons, they were in for 3.5 before Andy threw a couple of picks. But it's like there's so much pressure on the offense to almost score every damn time, because it's like, you know, the defense is giving up 30-something.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Chris McClain with us, morning host, 92.7 WFNZ in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can follow him for great Carolina Panthers and all sorts of other information at MacWFNZ, longtime pal of mine. All right, so just switching over to that defense, because I don't want to run too long here. So we got Jeremy Chinn, we got Frankie Louvu over here in Washington. They lose Derrick Brown, their best defensive lineman, week one for the whole season after trading Brian Burns. And Shaq Thompson's also out for the year, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I don't care how good Jairo Aviro is as a defensive coordinator, and that defense was pretty good last year, oh, by the way, as you know, as a lot of people don't know. They were, I think, top five or so. I don't care how good you are as a defensive coordinator, you cannot make up for all of that.
No. I mean, you mentioned all those guys, right? So they're gone from last year. They were most of those guys were the heart of this defense. And then you go in with the fact that if you take their training, like their defense that they was their first team defense in training camp, they will be missing either 7 or 8 of those starters from that defense on Sunday. So, like, they already let a lot of guys go, traded Burns, Louvu, Chinn, you know, gone. Then they have all these injuries, and you mentioned Brown and Shaq, and it's a bunch more, and it's just too much for Aviro to handle. I mean, a lot of people here are starting to get on the defensive coordinator because, you know, you want to point the finger somewhere. But it's just the injuries and then the guys they let go in the offseason. And the reason they let him go is because they wanted to put all the resources to help Bryce. That's why they went out and got Robert Hunt, Damian Lewis, and paid $150 million for two guards. And that's worked. And they went out and got Deontay Johnson, and that's worked too. But the defense between the injuries and what they let is a mess. It's embarrassingly bad. It is the 9th most points allowed in the Super Bowl era through 6 games. I mean, they are like all-time bad. And I don't know if they're getting maybe Clowney comes back.
Yeah.
But the Calvary's not coming back this week. So, I mean, you know how good that offense is in Washington. Y'all put up 30 points on average. I can't imagine what you do to this defense.
Yeah. I mean, if they're clicking, and, you know, there's times where they're unstoppable and they're clicking and the oil's running through the engine real, real well and real hot. And then there's times where they're a little bit rusty for a period of time. So maybe that's the only chance. And if, you know, somehow, some way, a couple of balls go your way, you know, and there's 3 or 4 turnovers, which hasn't happened so far, but, you know, we'll see. All right, one last thing I got to let you out, because I know you're a big college hoops guy, and you cover the ACC a lot. What do you make out of Tony Bennett retiring, whatever the hell he's doing down in Charlottesville?
I mean, it was shocking to me. Like 55 years of age, feels like he's in his coaching prime. And then the timing of it, too. I mean, they're 2.5 weeks away from their season opener. They've been practicing. They've had scrimmages. So the timing is not ideal, having to tell your players, by the way, I'm bailing on you right now. It sounds like it has a lot to do with disillusion. And he's far from the first, right? Whether it's football or basketball, to be disillusioned with the current state, the NIL, the transfer portal. He also, and you know this, like his style of program is not one that is conducive to thriving and with those things going on. So I understand it. I just hate the timing, you know, for the team. But that's a damn, that's a blockbuster. Hell, they've lost Roy, Kay, you know, Boeheim, Tony Bennett. I mean, that league is getting stripped of stud coaches here in the last few years.
Yeah, and a lot of people aren't going to feel bad about it because they just only care about, like, everybody getting what's rightfully theirs and whatever comes with. But that is a side effect. I don't know if that's the right word. My man, I appreciate you. I know you got to run. I know you got a family to take care of and a weekend to have. Again, always appreciate you. Good luck to your Panthers the rest of the way. Just do me a favor, please. Don't win on Sunday so I can have a decent week on the radio. That's all I ask for, okay?
Oh my God, it'll be Armageddon on Monday if you lose. If the Panthers win this game, I'm listening to your full show, man. I got to tell you right now because it'll be good.
I appreciate you. I need all the listeners I can help. Chris McClain, host in the mornings of the Mac and Bone Show, 92.7 WFNZ in Charlotte at Mac WFNZ. Thanks, Mac. Appreciate you. All right, there's my guy, Chris McClain. Good fun spot there. Gets you caught up to date a little bit with the Carolina Panthers. So, yeah, everybody, we've actually moved on, right? I don't know where we are in terms of the NFL's hierarchy. We'll find out more where I think they are right now in the Super Six later on. Are they in it? Are they out after last week's? We'll find out. That's just one man's humble opinion. But I know this. They're in better shape than the Carolina Panthers. There's no doubt about that. All right, we are way late for the trending alert. We'll do that. We'll come back. We'll reset. And we'll get you guys aboard on the show. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, indeed, the Carolina Panthers will be here for a 405 kick. Of course, it is Daryl Green's retirement number, jersey, all of that. Ceremony at halftime, festivities throughout the day. Our coverage, of course, throughout the day as well. DOC will take your calls on the way home and out of Northwest Stadium right here on the Team 980. Hopefully, it is a happy ride home indeed. I'll be there covering, of course, the game for Infinity Sports Radio and everything in between. So make sure you check out all of our coverage on Sunday as the Carolina Panthers one win come into town against the 4-2 Washington Commanders. Tonight, as we mentioned, two Major League Baseball playoff games starting at 508 Citi Field. It could be the final game for the New York Mets. Will they get swept in the three games in Flushing by the Los Angeles Dodgers? Will the Dodgers advance to the World Series? We'll find out again together starting at 5:08. Yankees up 2-1 after that crushing defeat to the Guardians last night at 8:08. Game 4 of the WNBA Finals between Minnesota and New York. Of course, New York looking for the series win beginning at 8 o'clock, and that's what's trending. All right, once again, thanks to Chris McClain for joining us from WFNZ in Charlotte. A little look at the Carolina Panthers. And again, it should strike everyone this way, how far this Commanders organization has come in the last year and a half. Right? We all knew it could, well, you always think it can't get any worse. I guess it can, right? I mean, That was a phrase we used several times throughout the course of many years, decades, that, well, it can't get any worse. And yet it kept getting worse. I mean, I'm here to tell you, I mean, listen, I did not live here, but I followed the team very closely, the organization very closely from afar. And I was doing national radio, so I talked about the Washington Redskins a lot. And ironically, 106.7 WJFK, before it became 106.7 The Fan, was one of my biggest affiliates in the early 2000s. So I would get a lot of calls from the Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, Southern Maryland area. I mean, I've been paying attention for a long, 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 long time. And we always say, you know, when I got on the beat and when I would do talk shows and when I would be a guest, well, it can't get any worse, right? I mean, didn't we say that when Ron Rivera was hired? I don't know how good it's going to be, but it can't get any worse. And somehow, in some way, in a lot of ways, it got way worse. And I didn't think that was possible with Bruce Allen. And you didn't think that was possible after Vinny Serrato. And the one conduit was Dan Snyder, right? And now, a lot of people did wrong. A lot of people did a lot of things wrong. But the one conduit is Dan Snyder.
There's one through line.
Yeah. I'm not saying David Tepper, the Carolina Panthers owner, is exactly the same as Daniel Snyder. But there are a lot of...
There's a big similarity with ownership that decides they're going to decide what's best for the team on an on-the-field standpoint.
Yeah. And listen, we all know this. Every owner has a right to have an opinion and maybe to have input and maybe to make a bottom-line decision. Because it's their money and their organization. But the so you can't say they have no right. Of course they have the right. But when organizations are run that way, they're going to be run wrong. When you have a true, legitimate, dye-in-the-wool football person, and Adam Peters is going to make mistakes. He's going to make mistakes. Things that he do, things that he does, things that he does are going to fail. Right? But when you have a legitimate, dye-in-the-wool football person making these decisions, as opposed to the owner, Josh Harris, even though Josh Harris seems like a nice guy and seems reasonable and rational and smart and savvy and he grew up a diehard fan and he understands the reverence and everything about this franchise. You don't want him making decisions on let's take just to use an example, Drake May over Jaden Daniels. Why? Because he does not know. He does not have as much institutional knowledge to make that decision as Adam Peters and Dan Quinn do and Cliff Kingsbury. He just doesn't. Even though he might have all of those qualities, he just doesn't. So when you have a situation where it appears that Frank Reich, the former Colts coach, the Carolina Panthers coach for like 4 months, apparently wanted C.J. Stroud, and David Tepper wanted Bryce Young. And to be fair to David Tepper, there were a lot of people, a lot of draft analysts, the ones that live in mommy's basement and the ones that don't live in mommy's basement, like smart people that all favored Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud as well. Okay? So I'm not saying he was the only one. But when you have that kind of structure, that kind of setup, it's almost always doomed to fail. We do not have that anymore. We do not have that anymore here. Thank goodness. I don't think. I can't imagine. Maybe 5 years from now, I don't know if things are going horribly wrong. Maybe. But I don't think we have that, and I don't think we've seen any evidence of that in Philadelphia with the 76ers, in New Jersey with the Devils, even though Josh Harris says he's kind of hands-off. Even with the teams that Magic Johnson has been involved in, and obviously this is the first go-around for Mitchell Rales, not necessarily for Mark Iam because he owns the tennis thing, but from a professional sports franchise, this is his first go-around. We don't have that anymore. We don't have that worry. We can actually sit here and talk about, hey, man, can they go to 5-2? Do they have the best quarterback in the NFL? Oh, there's that question again. Oh, wait till you see what I found this morning on the 33rd team. That might blow your mind a little bit. It's something Linnell and I talked about earlier this week. It's something that we'll readdress and bring up with a little bit more evidence coming up next. And we'll get to your calls on the game, 301-230-0980. Scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about this game? I would imagine 99.9% of you are going to pick the Commanders, and that's fine. That's totally understandable. I'm picking the Commanders. I'm trying to hide from that, what have you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you? How worried are you that this game might be a little too close for comfort or might go sideways? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about this game? Should we be concerned at all? Vegas and the bookmakers think, you know, they opened it up at 8.5. It's been bet down to 8. You guys know I don't do a lot of that stuff because I think it's largely meaningless and bookmakers have no idea what the hell they're talking about. Anything more than any of us do, no matter what people claim and whatever. But it is, for whatever it is, it's somewhat noteworthy that the Carolina Panthers and the Washington Commanders game is not expected, go figure, to be a close game, right? Now, again, kind of depends on your perspective. Like, if they only win 28-20, the Commanders, on Sunday, is that a good win? Is that too close for comfort? I guess it depends on how we get there, right? If it's a 20-20 game and with 2 minutes left, Jaden Daniels leads a scoring drive and Dan Quinn, for whatever reason, decides to go for two to make it from 6 to 8 instead of kicking the extra point, which I think would be dumb. But, you know, just using that as an example, if it's 28-20 and it's that way or something similar to that, right, is that too close for comfort? What if it's 28-20, but Carolina scores a late touchdown, and it's almost like, oh yeah, it was 28-13 just a minute ago, or 28-12, and Dave Canales goes for two, and they get it, and then all of a sudden it's 28-20, and I don't know, it's with a minute left, and then they recover the onside kick, because onside kicks are predictable now, and whatever, and they just win, and they win a game, and they win an NFL game by 8 points. I would guess there's a difference in terms of how we would feel as a whole if they do it the second way, the last way I just mentioned, say up 28-13, 28-12, whatever it is, late, give up a late touchdown, and it becomes an 8-point game, and they cover, they don't cover, depending on what you got it at, whether it's 8.5 or 8, maybe they push, kind of depends. There's a huge difference between that and again, Jaden Daniels leading a game-winning drive. Let's not use 28-20 in that particular scenario because, again, the one that I presented probably wouldn't make sense. Let's just say 27-20. It's a 20-20 game. They take over with 4 minutes left on the clock, couple of timeouts. Jaden Daniels just dump, 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 and they throw a touchdown pass, say, to Zach Ertz or whoever, and they win 27-20 and don't cover the number, however unimportant that is. People are going to probably be not happy. Even though they won, people are probably not going to be happy. And I would say this, lower your expectations. Lower your expectations. Sure, you want an easy win. Lower your expectations. The Carolina Panthers get paychecks too. Got a pretty good offense. They get paychecks too. Lower your expectations. We'll have the full pick coming up later on in the show as part of our dual NFL Sunday Super Six Packs Commanders. That's what people tried to call them. I just called them the Carolina Commanders. When Ron was here and the Marty Party, and one of the Marty Parties is still here, but you get the point. We'll have the full pick later on. I worry a little bit about this game because, as we talked about with Mac, the Carolina Panthers on offense can keep them in this game. If they can stay within a score and not have to abandon Chuba Hubbard as a ground presence, they can absolutely stay in this game. More details, more analysis coming up as well. Again, Linnell and I asked earlier this week, in case you weren't with us, I think on Wednesday, Windbag Wednesday, if you want to check it out in the Odyssey app, the Team 980, or at theteam980.com, Matt, it's got it all labeled and carved up for you. Is Jaden Daniels not only the best quarterback in the NFC East, and the NFC, is he the best quarterback in the NFL? And you might say, well, again, that's a preposterous, absurd question. Of course Patrick Mahomes is. You sure about that? You sure it's so absurd? I have something that'll show that it's not such an absurd theory. Coming up next, and I'll share it with you then. On the other side of 2 o'clock in the nation's capital on a feel-good football Friday, come and join us 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.